Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Beyond the Optics podcast with your host, Tulip Nandu. I'm a computational biologist at UT Southwestern Medical Center, an avid traveler, a blogger, and now a podcast host. Similar to my role as a researcher, which expects me to take an in-depth look at the projects I'm working on, I'm also curious to go beyond the optics for everything that is happening around and to leverage that knowledge to challenge the status quo and think from a different perspective. This podcast is an attempt by me to put the information out there and spark a curiosity amongst the listeners to go beyond the optics and not take the material they are fed at face value. For the next couple of episodes, we are going to talk about data and how it has encapsulated all our lives. We will be talking to Daniel Howard about how big data is leading to brain fatigue, the cost associated with it, and also on how being more customer-centric can solve most data overload problems by eliminating the non-essential data points. Daniel is a strategic business leader whose goal-oriented management and execution of business strategy drives customer-centric improvements across all lines of business. He has had a proven track record in business, evidenced by a progressive trajectory and multiple corporate and national rewards for teamwork and innovative problem solving, which includes an individual nomination for Forbes 30 Under 30 list in the finance industry. So welcome, Daniel, and thank you for being a guest on my pod.
Hi, Tu. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So first and foremost, if you can just give me a brief overview of your career path and how you've been so successful and getting into the nomination of Forbes 30 Under 30 list.
Yeah, of course. Well, the first answer to that is luck. I really don't know for the Forbes 30 Under 30 still to this day, but I started my career at Citi after graduating from SMU, econ finance minor in stats at SMU, joined Citi's two-year analyst development rotational management training program there. Most large companies have some type of new college hire rotational program. So I did that at Citi. Was in that two-year program. I was the first person in my class of about 50, 60 some odd analysts to get to the promotion, the official promotion from that rotational program. I'm still very proud of that and heckle some of my friends that were in that program here and there. I got that promotion maybe after 20 months. I spent 5-6 years at Citi, and then halfway through my MBA, where you and I met at UT Dallas, I moved over to Capital One as the business analytics manager. Sort of the same roles that I was in at Citi: strategy, analytics, process improvement, a fair amount of statistics and coding involved in that, both in SaaS and in C. At Capital One, it was true end-to-end business management. Hey, let's tap on some code to figure out within this particular organization what the data is telling me with this organization's function or this business unit's function, and then driving strategic initiatives from that, working with cross-functional partners to actually go and implement a solution, and then going and kind of being the project manager to go and implement that solution, as well as all the approval chain that's got to go through the pipe with large companies there. After my MBA, got headhunted over to USA. That was about November of 2019. So right before COVID really started hitting and everything, and I was on a business intelligence team there, leading the charge for providing data strategy and analytics for the marketing department at USAA. And then COVID hit, USAA halted all marketing and got laid off because there was no data, there was no strategy, there was no analytics to be had with a halted marketing strategy. So I was unemployed for about a month, did some personal stuff with my finance firm that I operate here in Dallas, and then ended up taking a contract role for a small kind of consumer finance, consumer lending firm. And recently, May of last year, started at Supreme Lending, where I'm essentially the director of business intelligence, and I manage all of Supreme Lending's analytics and insights end to end.
Very good. Yeah. So it seems like you've been like driven by data all throughout your career. And then that's where like our core crux of the podcast is this episode. So let's get into the meat of the discussion that we're going to have about data. Today, probably everyone knows what data is, like from the sources that we get data from. Some regard Twitter as the biggest university there is, you know, where we get all bunch of data. Sometimes people do have caution about like, there's like too much data there out there. So my first question to you is, are we too data driven? And what are the mere data problems that we face in today's world?
For sure, Tilo. That's a great problem. And truly, as someone who's been through the ringer of siloed, you're working at a company with siloed data sets, working at companies that are going through transitions into the cloud, and then working at companies that have been in the cloud and have established cloud data infrastructure. The common thing that I see, regardless of company, regardless of industry, is that there is too much data. And too much, if you have a problem with whatever product it is or service product that you're selling or service that you're providing, oftentimes throwing more data at that problem isn't necessarily the right solution. I've found that true targetedness, because that's a word, but being very targeted with the metrics that matter, being very targeted with what is the data that I need to solve this problem, and that focus on the metrics that matter from the customer's perspective, not from your perspective as the business owner, that's the way to efficiently and systemically solve these problems here. And you can get so much data into the melting pot, into the kitchen, and it's analysis paralysis. People just don't know what to do with this abundance of data that we have. It's a big problem.
Sure. Yeah. And then as you mentioned that, you know, getting all this data into the melting pot. So if we go one step before that, like there are always these concerns of the data sources or the discrepancy in the data that we get from. How do you decode that in your workspace, or at least in the things that you've worked on? Because more often in my work in cancer data, or in sometimes the data tools have different outputs. Probably the data that goes into the tools is different. So have you faced some kind of problems there where the data sources have different data outputs?
Yeah. And that's, there's kind of two aspects to that, right? One is, and you mentioned it more upstream, the actual data architecture or the data infrastructure in order to systemically get that feed so that a business intelligence or analysis team can then take that structured data and go and report and analyze and drive insights from it. Two pieces of the puzzle there. So what I will say on the data architecture, data infrastructure side, I am more downstream than that. I'm more of that second guy, the analyst, the business intelligence, you know, manager and director of that. But you cannot have business intelligence and analysis and insights without a solid infrastructure and architecture. And it's vastly important for the actual foundation of your analysis there. Now, in order to get the right feed systemically, the buzzword that I like to use is do it right once perfectly. That's kind of contradictory to the MVP, minimally viable product approach that is largely agile scrum methodology that, you know, data engineers typically operate by. However, when we talk about systemic feeds and code, right, a computer is only as smart as the person who is creating that computer. code is only as smart and will only do as much as the person who writes the code does outside of vast data learning models and things like that. But in machine learning and data science, yada, yada, yada. But still, all of that, all those algorithms are still coded by a person or a team. But siloed databases without unique identifiers, without primary keys, that's going to be a bottleneck. Even when you do get into cloud architecture and infrastructure, if you are not joining that data correctly on the right primary keys, if you do not digitally tag your upstream processes so that through your ETL, extract, transform, load, or ELT, Snowflake is all ELT instead of ETL. If that process isn't happening efficiently, all that's going to do is make your downstream data reporting and analytics environment inaccurate. And there's also going to be massive performance issues with that as well. You got to think about the customer that is accessing the report, be it through SSRS or Tableau or Oracle or Power BI, whatever that reporting methodology is, could be proprietary. If you have issues upstream with the feed, somebody's going to log into Power BI and it's going to take a minute and a half for that dashboard to render. And that's not a good customer experience. And that those issues all come from upstream.
Yeah. So in your experience, so that's a good segue. So have you seen or, you know, kind of been a part of like how bad data leads to bad analysis and in turn, bad interpretation? Because that causes, like, as you mentioned, a detrimental to the customer at the end.
Yeah.
So in your experience, have you been associated with, not associated personally, but have you seen this kind of, ripple effect that's gone through?
Oh yeah. I mean, it happens. It truly does happen all the time. And you can see in the minds of some of the people who are troubleshooting the situation, or sometimes even making the decisions on the situation, where they're focused on the wrong thing. And being focused on the wrong thing can be a result of bad data coming into the conversation and then being focused on when it shouldn't be. And you can also see it on people not focusing on the right. Come back to we might hear this another 15 times, Tulip. Not focus on the right metrics that matter. So we kind of touch upon both of them. So number one, garbage in, garbage out. And that can be data inaccuracies. That could be not measuring the right thing, or both the other things. But I heard an anecdote over the weekend. It was, all right, you got a pilot flying a plane, going to land at the airport. But the air traffic controller says, hey, you got all these runways over here. There's 15 runways. There's all these, gajillion acres of land for you to land on. Just don't focus on that dumpster right there. The trash guys didn't come. We haven't taken it out. Just don't focus on that. And the second that the pilot comes in to make its landing, he ends up focusing on that one thing that he was told not to focus on, the one error in the data.
Yeah.
And ends up being so focused on that he lands in the darn dumpster. You know, that anecdote, that analogy, whatever you want to call it, got to be careful with that, because putting too much focus on the wrong thing, especially if you know that it's come from a bad source of data, it really can be detrimental. And I've seen it happen. You can even think about, like, going back to metrics that matter, think about if you have an ice cream truck. Right. And the problem statement is, I'm not selling enough of my products. I'm not making enough bottom line sales. Okay. Well, think about an ice cream truck and sales. What are the metrics that matter? Okay. Maybe the products that I'm selling, the temperature of the days that I'm selling, the season, and the route that I'm taking. And the price. Those are really the four metrics that matter. Metrics that don't matter, my tire pressure, the uniform that I'm wearing, the nutritional value of the ice cream truck, that stuff doesn't matter. And you can also, it doesn't matter to the extent that the top four metrics do matter. And then we think about systemically getting the data for all of these seven aforementioned metrics. The cost of getting a systemic feed of tire pressure onto, like, into your data, does that cost outweigh the benefit of what will I now do once I know hourly or in real time at all points in time what my tire pressure is? Is that really going to help me sell more ice cream? Yep. No. So why am I doing it? And why are we focused on it? And why do we have 50 data engineers and analysts trying to reconcile and create this feed for type? It's silly.
That concludes the first part of my discussion with Daniel, which gave us an overview of how throwing more data points is not necessarily the solution to the problem, and focusing on the data points that do matter from the customer's perspective is the way forward. We shall discuss on the cost associated and the health problems caused by data overload in our next episode. Thank you so much for staying till the end and listening to the podcast. I hope you have enjoyed as much as I have bringing it to you. Please share it with your family and friends who would want to use this information to challenge the status quo and think from a different perspective. For more bite-sized information, follow me on Twitter at @TulipSNandu. And to receive interesting take on current topics, subscribe to my newsletter at tulip.substack.com. Until next time, go beyond the optics, friends.